I convince myself I am an artist and the world is my witness. Yes. I think that's a great quote. Because a lot of us we're waiting for validation from the other, from production and casting or other actors or the general public when they see something and you want a good review or you want to hear from a critic that, oh, that guy was great. But it's not about that. It's about making the choices and following the habits and doing all the things that make you a true artist. And then just trusting that if you're doing those things, that's enough. And the world will just, the world will see you doing it and you don't need their validation.
Laughing Vikings Live. High vibe chats with actors, comedians, and creators, plus stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, and most importantly, you. That's right, join us every Monday for new episodes and you can be a part of the show on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Twitch. Ask questions and interact in the comments. And make sure to share this with your actor, comedian, and creator friends so they can be a part of the show too. Can't make a live show? No problem. You can catch up on your favorite podcast platform and visit laughingvikings.com to find out how you can join the cast and crew. All right, it's time for today's show. Buckle up and make sure you stick around to the end because we have a special surprise for you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Laughing Vikings Live. Happy Monday Fun Day. Let's go.
Always start with jazz hands. Always start with jazz hands. Welcome, welcome, welcome. This is episode 114. That's 114 times. And if you're just tuning in, after this, go back and watch 113 other episodes or listen to them on which podcast platform?
All of them.
Every podcast platform. Form. How you doing, BK brother?
I'm doing very well, Lars. It has been a nice, relaxing start to this week, and I am very excited for what's going on later on this week, namely tomorrow, where we have a special event happening.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah. But yeah.
Should we remind people about what that special event is?
I think we should. I think we've been teasing them long enough, Lars.
Yes, that is right. We are hosting through Laughing Vikings and Actors Audition Club. We're hosting a special acting masterclass with none other than, and if you've listened to the podcast, you've heard his name 1,000 times, maybe 1,000,000 times. And I don't think I'm exaggerating there. Literally 1,000,000 times, not figuratively. Literally 1,000,000 times you've heard the name Tom Todorov from the Tom Todorov Conservatory and Studio. Brandon's been a member with him for a year and a bit, I think.
Yep.
Myself as well. We're going to talk lots about Tom today, but tomorrow, which is November 17th, Thursday, November 17th at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, up till sometime between 8 and 9 p.m. Tom has generously donated his time to come give a free masterclass where he'll be working with actors on their monologues, directing them, coaching them, teaching all of us and sharing his vast knowledge that he's had throughout his career as an actor, director, producer, and coach. So you can join us for that. There are still some spots available. There might even be some spots where you can hop in as a performer. Go to laughingvikings.com/Tom. Laughingvikings.com/Tom. It's right there. And that is tomorrow. So today what we thought we would do is as a little precursor here, a little runway until we launch the masterclass tomorrow, is we would introduce you to Tom a little bit by sharing some of our notes from the hours and 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 hours of hours and hours and hours and hours of training we have had with Tom. Hopefully for everyone who has joined, I think we're up to, as of the last check, there's 42 people who have registered for that Zoom workshop tomorrow. We've got people joining us from all over the world. And we're going to host some people here in the studio. So if you're in the Toronto area and you don't have a home setup, for Zoom, which also I just want to say shame on you because you should have a home studio. But if you don't, you can come join us here. We're going to have a small group of people. We'll have a little viewing party here in our studio. And then when it's time for someone to work, they can hop in the back room to have a little privacy and they can work in that studio. And then we'll have our viewing gallery in the front studio here. But today we want to introduce you to Tom. And I just first want to share a little bit of story about how I met him because I have a little souvenir that says Tom Todorov in intensive. And you see the date there?
Yep.
January 30th, 2015. So what is that? It'll be 8 years.
Yep.
And so I'll take you back to 2015. At the time, I was doing lots of stand-up. I was maybe 2 to 3 years in from doing on camera work. I had done lots of sketch comedy, lots of dinner theater, improv, sketch, but only actually hardly any actual actor training. I had taken some improv classes and maybe some sketch classes, but I'd been doing a ton of stand-up, headlining shows already. So I've had a bit of a chip on my shoulder, but I'd never trained. My agent, Bella Grundy, suggested Tom Todorov's intensive. I didn't really know what I was getting into. I got to say, I was a little skeptical going into it. Even the first, they always set up their intensives where they have a voice and speech coach run an hour voice and speech warm up. And during that, I was looking around at these actors. And I just say that in quotation marks, just because to me, coming from the stand up and sketch world, I saw like straight actors as maybe a little hoity-toity or a little taking themselves too seriously. And I was like, what is this all about? And I specifically remember feeling very uncomfortable during that voice and speech warm-up. People all making these crazy noises and crazy faces and lip trills and tongue twisters and all the things for anyone who's taken a proper voice and speech class, all the things you do to properly prepare your instrument and to connect with your voice and your breath, which is your connection to emotions. All the things now that I've learned are really imperative and essential to a great performance. But at the time I'm looking around, and this is me coming from a stand-up background. I had done crazy things on stage and in sketch comedy, but I'm looking around at these people and I had this real, I don't even know how to explain it, but just this weird, I guess it was an insecurity looking around at these people thinking, what are they doing? Oh, I don't want to, they're doing all these weird stuff. But I took 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 full pages of notes. And then flash forward, it was actually several years after that. It was, I think the next workshop I did, maybe I did one in between, but the next one was January of 2020. I did another one with Tom, loved it. It was a weekend intensive. The first one I just signed up as an auditor. I wasn't even performing. So we did the voice and speech workout, and then I kind of went and hit in the back and feverishly took notes and loved what I was seeing. But then I did another one where I finally signed up as a performer. Love that. Got to work with Tom on stage and really felt invigorated and revitalized. Learned a ton. Then I signed up for another one in March of 2020. And the last intensive he did before the world fell apart because of COVID and everything stopped was here in Toronto that I was signed up for. But I bailed like 2 days before because I'm like, okay, if this virus is spreading the whole world, I don't want to sit in a room with 50 people who are yelling and screaming and purposely breathing and coughing and burping and doing all the things that humans do in a room. So I bailed from that one. And then a few months later, when everything was shut down and there was no, I had no stand-up gigs, there was no TV and film, there was no theater, there was no live events, we were all in lockdown, they started their Zoom weekly workshop on Saturdays. So it was the summer of 2020. I signed up with that. So every Saturday I was part of this amazing 5-hour workshop, which in retrospect was just such a blessing. And I'm so grateful for that because during a time when nothing was happening, it kept me on track and kept me focused. And in a year in 2020, where I was probably on stage and on set less than I had ever been since I started, I felt more like an actor and more like a performer than I had ever had in my life because I was working and training and learning every week. And his weekly workshops are incredible. Brandon, you've attended a ton of them. There are three classes in one. There's text analysis. Then there's a full voice and speech class with world-renowned voice and speech coaches, people who have trained and coached at Yale, at Juilliard, at CalArts, at the Royal Shakespeare Company, people who have coached people on Broadway and in Hollywood TV and films. That year and a bit was incredible. And then the following summer, in summer of 2021, I took their week-long summer intensive in New York City. So I went down to New York, and it was 7 days just jam-packed with all their conservatory instructors. That was an incredible transformational experience. I got to work with Tom again in person and work with all their instructors. And then after that, I was like, you know what? I'm all in. So I cashed in all my chips, and I joined Conservatory in September of 2021. That was an 8-month conservatory, initially meant to be hybrid, meaning some people would be in person in New York and then other people who couldn't get to New York would be there via Zoom. However, the pandemic raged on and New York really didn't open up. So 7 of those 8 months ended up being virtual over Zoom, which in my opinion was amazing and probably easier. And if it had been only in person, I may not have even signed up. Because then you have to figure out how to live in New York and all the extra expenses of accommodations and New York living. But I could do it from the studio here at home. Then the very last month in April, May of 2022, I was down in New York City for some of the final classes and our graduation and all that. So all that to say, it's been a long journey that started in January 31st of 2015. So started 8 years ago. And I can attribute a ton of my success in the acting world and also in life from Tom. So for those of you who are signed up for that, you're going to love that tomorrow. Make sure you feverishly take notes. And for those of you who are just watching this or listening to this right now, and you're not signed up, go sign up at laughingvikings.com/Tom. So let's get into it. We thought what we'd do today is we were going to share some of our favorite notes, or what we like to call Todorov-isms. Tom has a very codified or codified framework of acting that he teaches from. So it is a system. But on top of that, he's got all these brilliant sayings and things that he often shares during the sessions that you'll hear over and over. And that's one of my favorite things about training with him is it's consistent. I look back to my notes 8 years ago, and then if I look to my notes from last week's Saturday workshop, a lot of it will be the same because there is a consistency to it and there is a framework and a process that he follows. So I'll share the first one. And I think this is when I got hooked on him. My very first note was, master actors always find humor funny as money and charming is disarming. And I did not expect that coming from him. I was thinking that this was going to be some fancy hoity-toity acting coach, and it was where everyone was going to be all proper. So coming from a stand-up and sketch background, immediately I was hooked, and I was like, oh, humor, funny as money. This guy's into humor and into comedy. I am on board. And that's a huge part of Tom's philosophy in acting and in life is nobody ever dumped someone or broke up with someone because they were too funny. And nobody ever didn't give someone an acting job because they were too funny as well. So he always talks about the negatives are always written in the script. It's our job as actors and as human beings to find the humor and to find a positivity and also find the love. So that's one of my favorite things. And that was the first note I ever took. And if there's a note that I need to continually return to, even though I am a stand-up comic and do a lot of comedy, it's still find the funny, and funny is money and charming is disarming. Yeah. So there's one.
Because I always think as actors, there's always this little voice inside us that's like, we need to do the tragedy, or we need to be like the heartthrob in order to become a successful actor, in order to be the successful actor. And that's not true. And like we've seen throughout film, the characters that we gravitate towards have tons and tons of humor and like have such this like dry sense of humor. And I always think of the best example, which Tom always gives, is Hannibal Lecter in The Silence of the Lambs and Anthony Hopkins' performance, because there's a ton of humor. There's a ton of mischief. And like, That's, yeah, it's,
right.
it's
fantastic. Which on paper, if you were to read that script, probably an awful, horrifying thing of a cannibalistic serial killer who's raping and murdering women and men. Maybe I forget that story, but even the Buffalo Bill side of things was awful. So it's like, why would you ever want that? But what Anthony Hopkins did is he brought so much charm and positivity and humor and fun to that role, where then As a character, he just became this fascinating guy. And you find yourself watching that and you're like, why do I like this fucking horrible human being? And you like him because he's charming and he's disarming, which is probably something to say about some serial killers, how they reel people in. They always say like, oh, he was such a nice guy, and he always seemed like such a neighborly fella, you know? Not obviously advocating for serial killers here, but I am advocating for finding the humor and finding the positivity in your life and in your work. And you're right. A lot of times we think it's got to be serious and, oh, it's emotion and it's about emoting and I got to cry and I got to cry on command and I got to be this serious, serious person, especially with things like some classical plays like Shakespeare or Chekhov, where it's like, oh, it's just such a serious time. And then it ends up being horrendous and boring and terrible to watch. And it feels bad to even perform that stuff when you perform it that way, because you're like, There's no life in this. And the biggest problem with it is it's not truthful. It's not real, because In real life, humans find humor in the worst of scenarios. At funerals with your family, someone will break the tension with a little crack and you find some levity and some love in what's an otherwise terrible situation. After natural disasters, people figure out, how do we carry on? And it's through singing a song and having some fun and cracking some jokes. And even in like the worst of worst scenarios, if you read books about the Holocaust and things like that, how do people get through that? They got through it by remaining positive and remaining upbeat in their mind, despite the horrific scenarios that they were involved in. So find the funny, find the humor. Funny is money, charming is disarming. All right, moving on, next.
One of my personal favorites is Raise Your Personal Standards to the Heavens. It's one of my favorite quotes. There's clips. I've been doing clips for the Tom Todorov Studio for a little while now, about a year, and that's always one that I come back to and then we'll make countless clips of, because I absolutely love that line and I think it's so important for actors, especially actors and performers, because we're the only ones that are held accountable for our own work, and we're the ones that have to put our stamp of approval on it. And if we want to make sure that we are elevating our game and making sure that all of our auditions are top notch, then we need to keep raising our standards and continuously find the things that make us uncomfortable. And this goes hand in hand with another quote that Tom likes to say, is get comfortable being uncomfortable. Because the more uncomfortable you are, that's probably the closer you are to getting to the right beats and to the heart of the scene. And like that, it makes all the difference. Cause like no one owes you anything in this business. We come out of theater school, we come out of these conservatory programs and we think like, oh, I'm done. I've learned everything that I've needed to learn in acting. Good. Ready to go. That's it.
Put me in your movie.
Put me in it. I'm ready to go, Brad Pitt. Let's go.
Right.
You're not at that level. And because, as Tom likes to say again, you have paid, or your parents have paid, for you to be in those community theater shows, to be in those school shows. And they're also paying to see it. And that's the difference, is now out of that environment, out of that place, you are now put into a different category with people that have been acting for money for either a long period of time or a short period of time, and that changes who you are as a performer. And the more you grasp the idea of no one owes you anything and you are your own way to elevate your own auditions, and if it comes from inside you, that drive, that determination, it comes from inside you. And the more you give into that and the more you let that show in each and every audition, the more you're not going to be forgettable. The more that people are going to take notice of who you are, write down that name. No, you may not get the next three auditions right now, but they're going to remember who you are because you made choices. And you're someone that is fighting to get better each and every single day.
Right. Yeah, I love that. Elevate your or raise your standards to the heaven. And Tom's is someone who constantly is living that and calling us out on that. So mm-hmm. it's things like your prep. Did you properly prep? Do you know exactly what you're saying and why you're saying it? Even your setup, your wardrobe. Are you ready to rock? Are you camera ready? Did you make all these small little choices that speak before you? And I think that informs your life outside of acting as well, as just constantly raising your standards and expecting and demanding the best from you. Because a lot of in life, it's like, and especially in acting, I think a lot of people, they're trying to get the most by doing the least, and people mm-hmm. take shortcuts, and they want to save money by not taking classes, and they want to save money by not getting professional headshots. And they're trying to take all these shortcuts when really it should be going deeper and deeper and putting more and more of yourself into things and mm-hmm. raising your standards higher and higher and higher. And I think that's a formula for success in all avenues of life, in your relationships, in your career, in your finances, all of that stuff. So that's another great one. I've got one here that says, where was it? Acting is not about actors. It's about the story. And I think that's something that we forget as well. We sometimes we have our own personal blocks or personal preference, or you hear actors say things, well, like, oh, I wouldn't do something like that, or I wouldn't say it that way, or I wouldn't yell in that scenario, or maybe the opposite, I wouldn't cry in that scenario, or whatever it might be. And they're thinking that it's about them or them as a human being, but no, it's about the writer. Somebody wrote this script, wrote this character, wrote this story, and your job as the actor is to transform yourself into that person, or transform yourself under and into those given circumstances, not to give excuses as far as like why your own psychological blocks or your own physical blocks or your own anything that might hold you back from fully expressing what the author and what the playwright or the script writer wanted to actually express. So just remembering that it's always about storytelling, and it's never about you. Even though as actors, obviously we get a lot of accolades, and we're the people that are on camera and our big giant heads are in these close-ups on movie screens, but it is about the story. And if you put yourself in front of that, then you're sort of sabotaging the whole story if you're making it about you. And also making it about the story relieves a lot of pressure and relieves a lot of tension in yourself, because then you just say, hey, it's not all about me. It's just about telling the proper story and conveying the story to the audience, not about your own little idiosyncrasies or your own little quirks or psychological stuff that you got running through your own head. It's just story, 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 story. You got one there?
Yep.
All right, fire it up.
I do. Make the most positive choice every time. And I think we sort of touched on this a little bit with the comedy right off the top. And so I won't dwell on this too much. But we do end up committing ourselves to the negative choice a lot of the time. And because as we talked about off the top of this, the negative is written down. It's on always the page, written. And it's our job to find them. Yeah, it's always written. And it's our job to find the positive. And the more you focus on finding that love or that positivity, the more your scene will light up, and like, you'll naturally find the humor. You will naturally find the opposites. You'll naturally find the mischief if you just focus on playing the positive.
Right. Yeah. And yep. I mean, I think that's, again, that's life too. It's like, watch the news, listen to people gossip, listen to people complain. It's like, there's so much negativity. So you can be a huge beacon of light, and you can be an outlier and be someone who stands above the crowd just by finding the positivity. And the other thing too is, if 95% of the actors are doing it as written and reading negative words and thinking, oh, okay, this guy's pissed off and this is an argument, and it's all negative, just a gross argument and no love and no positivity in it. And then they watch 50 people or 100 people do that, and then there's 5 people that find some love and find some humor. Those people naturally are just going to rise to the top. So find the positive. There's one here that is, all extraneous movement is bleeding energy. And that's something that, especially in film, but it applies to theater as well. Like things like, whether it's facial stuff, or a lot of times people don't trust that they're enough. So on certain words and lines, they're pushing forward with them, or people doing the hands or always pointing, or shoulder shrugs as they're talking, all these little things that distract the audience and actually take away from the story. And that also ties into something that he often says,
you can't hit a moving, love and success
can't hit a moving target. Mm-hmm. So if I'm constantly doing this in a scene or rocking back and forth like this, and I'm too frenetic in my energy. Shakespeare talks about it in Hamlet's advice to the players as well, like sawing the air thus, you know, it's like, suit the action to the word and the word to the action, and everything else is extraneous. And a lot of people think like, oh, this is what I gotta be a dynamic speaker, so I gotta talk like this, or eyebrows is one that I'm guilty of. And a lot of people, it's shoulder shrugs, or it's just kind of dancing feet, and all that takes away from the story. And he often says as well, aim your heart at the heart you want to reach as well. So, and inviting the audience in. So there's huge power, especially in TV and film. Like in TV and film, if you're in a nice close-up, I can't be doing this, and I can't be having a hand pop out of nowhere that's disconnected. Like, that's so weird. So you got to get comfortable. And that's that in conservatory, that was a note that I got a handful of times where I was, quote unquote, trying, which is also a swear word. I was trying to do too much when I was in a tight frame, when all I needed to do was just sit there and just be a human being and let people see me as a, see, I did it right there. It's like, you can't do that. And it's like, where are those hands coming from? So just the idea of stillness, which really, that extraneous movement, what really helps with that is relaxation, doing those voice and speech warm-ups, taking classes like Alexander technique and Linklater technique, so that you are fully relaxed. Another one, I'll tie in some other of his Todorov-isms to this. He'll also say, tension draws attention. So if I'm doing this all the time, or if I've got something weird going on with my eyebrows or with my face, then people are watching that and noticing that. And whether that's the audience or the production team and casting, if casting is seeing you do this all the time, the split second that took them out of it is the split second that they missed the most impactful moment of the scene potentially. So it's all extraneous that takes away from the story.
My next one actually comes with a clip from the Tom Todorov YouTube page. Would you like to say the magic words, Lars?
Roll the clip. In the world of show business, you know, the hours are long, A lot of times they're on a remote location, so you don't get to go home anymore. So we are looking for creative partners, not projects. Projects are people we have to handle, who aren't prepared, who don't know all their words, et cetera, et cetera. In every area of your personal and professional life, aspire to be a partner, never a project. And when we're holding auditions, we're not looking for new friends. We don't have time to see the friends we have. We're looking for creative partners that are gonna get us home on schedule, on budget, so we can see the friends we do love and the partners we do love.
The thing that I've always loved about the word partner is it always has felt like an equal. And that's the reason I absolutely love the word and why I think it's important that we all strive to be creative partners in this process rather than actors that are fighting for the scraps.
Right. Or begging for a job or desperately needing a job. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because when you show up on set and you are that beggar or you are that that person that is just doesn't know what they're doing, you're not going to be successful. You're not going to be someone that they bring back because you're not there ready to be a part of that process. And like, I think we've all worked with people that we absolutely adore working with because they're either a problem solver or like, they're just fun to have a back and forth with because right. like that's what we all strive to have is we strive to get that, that person that we have that interaction with so that we can create something together. It's all about coming together as a team to create something that people are going to watch again and again. And like, the more we have those creative partners coming in to add their two cents to something or to add like their point of view to something, in that context of the movie or TV show or play or what have you, like that's what makes great art. That's what makes like the process so much fun. And it makes us want to work with you again because you're there being like, yeah, I can do this. I'm bellhop, but that's okay. I'm coming in and I'm like, well, if like, oh, we don't know how we're going to film this. Oh, well, what if we did that? Oh, that's great. Let's do that. That's perfect. And like, that brings everything together and it makes everything go faster. And like, again, like as Tom said in that clip, you get to go home to the partners and friends that you love and you get to hang out with every day because you want to be around them.
Right. Yeah. Love it. All right. I've got one here. The universe is intensely specific. Make nothing general. Being general is lazy. And also being general is not truthful. It's not how the world works. Universe, whether it's a certain species or like if you look at a flower or you look at a snowflake, it's like everything is so specific. It's not general. Even people, you look at every person and every person has these very, very unique, specific things, how they say things, how they dress, how they look, how they cut their hair, mm-hmm. What they wear, versus if you vanilla or just like you kind of like wash everything over with one tone. And that applies to your, like when you're doing a monologue, finding all of the notes, finding all of the beats, making all of the choices rather than you have a preconceived notion like, oh, this is a fight. This is an argument. I'm mad at her. So this whole scene, I'm mad. And then you watch that and nothing specific. It's just, oh, that guy was generally mad. Okay, that guy can yell and be angry. Great, way to go. Like, who can't do that? So just being very specific, specific in your choices, specific in your movements, especially movements, physical movements. So we already talked a little bit about it. But if you're all, if it's always this over and over, it becomes the same thing over and over, and then it just doesn't mean anything. Versus finding specific ways, like when you're handling a prop, you can handle it just in a very generic, general way, or you can do something with it that is very specific and informs your character and informs the story, and ultimately is unique compared to 100 other auditions that they saw. Being very specific with your wardrobe choices as well. Tom, I'll often say your background and your wardrobe and your lighting all speaks before you. before you even say a word in an audition. Mm-hmm. So if you're very specific about that, then they see someone, oh, this person makes strong choices. And when you are specific, especially when it's specific, specific things that are unique to you, then casting and production gets to see a fully formed, unique, special human being. And I've heard a lot of people say this, but no character is going to be more interesting than you as a human being, because if you've lived a proper life, you've lived a fully fleshed out, exciting life that is filled with all the ups and downs and all these positive and negative experiences. So if you bring more of specifically you and your bold choices to any role, that's going to pop off the stage or pop off camera more than generalizing things will. So be specific. ABS, always be specific.
Mm-hmm. This is very similar to what you just said. But I do love just the wording of it. Justify everything, every word you speak and every move you make.
Right.
Because you have to. And like, if you know the who, what, when, where, why, and how, then
right.
You are ahead of most of the actors that are working, you're working against right now.
Yeah. Make sure it's all justified. Why are you saying it? Why are you making that move? What do you mm-hmm. want? Yep. Constantly ask, why are you still in the scene? Why are you still on stage? And if you don't have a good answer to it, well, then you would have walked off, or the other person in your scene partner maybe would have walked off. So justify everything, which is also Hamlet's advice to the players. So that's always such a brilliant piece of text to return to, because Shakespeare really informs a lot of this stuff just in that one little bit. Yeah. All right, what do I got here? I convince myself I am an artist and the world is my witness.
Yes.
I think that's a great quote. Because a lot of us we're waiting for validation from the other, from production and casting or other actors or the general public when they see something, and you want a good review or you want to hear from a critic that, oh, that guy was great. But it's not about that. It's about making the choices and following the habits and doing all the things that make you a true artist. And then just trusting that if you're doing those things, that's enough. And the world will see you doing it, and you don't need their validation. So it's about making, like, especially our philosophy with auditions here, when we're helping people, it's making big, bold choices that are unique and specific to you, so that you can then wash your hands of it and then just be like, hey, that's my take on it. That's what I bring to the table. You want that? Great. You don't want that? Great. Mm-hmm. That was me, and that's what I would bring to the table. Obviously, you're also open to redirects and redirection and adjustments from the casting director or from the director on the day. But feeling that you're strong and bold and that you're not bringing that needy energy to things where you're like, oh, please tell me I'm an actor. Tell me I'm an artist. Please put me in your thing. Am I good? Did you like that? Was that what you wanted? What do you want? Just tell me how you want me to say it, and then I'll say it that way. Like that, that's the kind of energy. And that's what Tom's talking about, a partner versus a project. It's like casting like a director, especially in TV film, directors hardly ever working and rehearsing with the actors on their performance. They just need someone who brings a bold performance and strong choices to the role, not someone that they're going to have to babysit and be like, oh, you should say this word this way and say this word that way. And mm-hmm. Like that, that's a nightmare for a director, because they have a million other things and they're dealing with all the department heads on set and they're dealing with 100 other people. So if after every line read, you're like, was that what you wanted? Was that good? It's like, and that is one of the challenging things about being an actor, is we get a shockingly little amount of feedback. Like, you often think about the hundreds and hundreds of auditions you've had. How many times have you heard from your agent, like, that was amazing, or from a casting director, thank you so much, that was awesome? Or even when you shoot something from a director, or even when they book you, you often don't hear,
oh, this is why I booked you. This was great. And this was great. We loved this in your audition. It's mm-hmm. kind of just like, nobody's got time for that. You booked it, do your job, and bring your A game on the day, not be babysitted, be babysat and be coddled and stroked. And I got to work your ego and make sure you feel good. You got to make yourself feel good.
Yep.
All right. What do you got?
Change the molecules in the room.
Ooh, you bastard. That was,
was that your next one?
No, go ahead.
There's a lot of times, especially early on in your career. And again, we've talked about this earlier on. No one owes you anything. No one knows who you are. And the thing that makes you the most uncastable, and like I use that term loosely, really, but like what makes you not get the job is that we don't know who you are. We don't trust who you are. And the more you bring yourself to the role, those bold, strong choices, and you make it difficult for people to say no. And that's what you have to do when you change the molecules in the room. And how do you change the molecules in the room? Tom's technique, the vocal variation,
right.
Rate, inflection, pitch, dynamic, viewpoints, time, space, shape, movement, story, emotion, the 15 guideposts, the three tenets and the three techniques. If you use Tom's technique, you will change the molecules in the room every single time because you are the actor that is specific. You've justified everything and you're making bold, strong choices that no one else is making.
Right. And versus sometimes people get caught in like, oh, it's got to be real neutral, naturalistic behavior. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I'm not like that. I don't get emotional like that, or I don't get big like that. But it's like Stella Adler's quote is no play or film ever happens on an ordinary day. It's always mm-hmm. these extraordinary people in extraordinary situations. And if you want to just go watch someone like, yeah, you got to be natural and appear like a regular human being. Mm-hmm. But you're a regular human being in these extraordinary circumstances. And really often the roles and the greatest characters, they're not quote unquote, yeah, they're human, but they're these extraordinary people who on film and on stage are changing the molecules in the room. And when you meet people in real life, sometimes you meet actors too, and you're like, oh, it's no wonder you're crushing it, because the energy and the radiance and just the vibration of that person, when they do enter a room, the room does change because they're not just low vibration, low energy, trying to hide and trying to be small and not wanting to rock the boat and not wanting to stand out. Not that you're doing any of these things just to stand out. Again, it's about the story, but it's just, again, being bold. What do I got here? This kind of relates to, I convince myself that I'm an artist and the world is my witness, but I act to seek my own good opinion. And to be expressive, not impressive. That one was always a big one for me because I felt that coming from stand-up and sketch comedy, a lot of the times I was like, oh, I got to impress these people and I got to do all these big things to impress them. And it's to be a fully fleshed human being and to be an expressive human being. But to seeking your own good opinion, you want to make yourself proud and feel good about your own work and feel good about your own prep. And then when you do that, you don't need the opinions of other people. And that makes you a way more attractive person in general and attractive to casting when they're like, oh, that person seems like a happy person who is fully in their own body and in their own mind and is fully expressive and not all blocked up and not all tense and all those things. So just focus on making yourself happy first. And then once you do that, then you have an opportunity to make other people happy.
Mm-hmm.
You got one there?
Mm-hmm.
I got
remember
one
to forget.
There you go. That's a good one.
Remember to forget. And I think we've talked about this one extensively before, but it's always good to reiterate as well. Remember to forget. You've worked on it so much that you're not seeing the words as they scroll through your eyes, or you're so prepared, or you've done it 250 ways. And we've talked about that, doing that extensively on this podcast, but like work on it so much that you don't even remember you're acting.
That's one of the, this is one of the hardest things, maybe not hard, but I think it's one of the biggest challenges, and it's a real paradox in acting, mm-hmm. because you do need all this prep, to learn your scenes and learn the lines and learn, more importantly, learn your intentions and, learn the physicality that you want to have matching those words. But then when someone yells action, or when the play starts, if it's theater, you got to forget all that, mm-hmm. and you got to put it all behind you and just trust that it's in your body. But you as the character, you don't know how the scene's going to end. And sometimes it's one of the biggest traps when someone will look at a scene and they're like, oh, at the end of this scene, the person breaks up with me, or there's a tragedy or a death at the end of the scene. And then they play the beginning at the front. So then they play the whole thing, knowing, oh, at the end of this, I shoot myself. So I must mm-hmm. be very depressed. And they play the whole thing depressed. And that can be one scene, or the worst is if it's the whole play and someone plays the entire play or the entire movie, kind of the same note, because they know the ending. But it's a challenge to, and also the other part of this is not to appear premeditated. You leaving some room for spontaneity and mm-hmm. for some improv and for new experience. And that's when magic happens, because you'll finish a scene and you're like, people will say, oh, I really felt that. And it's because they kind of let go of some of that preparation and let go of some of those premeditated choices that maybe you made those choices and you like them. But if it becomes too formulaic and too pre-planned, mm-hmm. audiences get a sense of that too. And your scene partner, it just won't seem like a real interaction, because in real life, if you and I walk into a room, I don't know what you're going to say and you don't know what I'm going to say. And we don't know how the conversation is going to end. And that's where real magic happens. And it's still one of the most challenging things. And I'm thinking that in working monologues, like I've been working a ton on a Shakespeare monologue, and I've said those words probably now thousands and thousands of times. So to avoid that trap of getting hooked into one delivery and one intonation and having the same inflection or the same exact movements where it becomes not true, because human beings don't act like that. It has to be spontaneous and in the moment. You hear people like, it's always now, and I don't know what's going to happen next. So which is I think why I think that's something that separates incredible actors from community theater actors, is community theater actors they've learned their lines, they know what they're going to do, and beat by beat and word by word it's exactly the same every night, versus having some danger and some spontaneity and just that idea of like, I don't know what's going to happen next. And the audience too, if things are too pre-planned and predictable, the audience is just like, okay, I see where this is going, versus an audience that's on the edge of their seat and they're watching two characters and they're like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, holy shit, I didn't expect that coming. Like versus something where it's just so pre-planned and premeditated. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's a great one, which also falls in line with, act at the speed of life, yep. is sort of tandem with that one. And that's a huge trap, is actors follow punctuation, and just remembering that punctuation is not for the actor. Punctuation is for the reader. So it makes sense, but people don't speak with punctuation. And I don't pause every time, a comma comes. I don't break after every period, because this is not how humans speak. I'm not thinking, oh, that's the end of a period. But often if you've memorized lines, which is a trap that we don't really think of it that way, when you've memorized lines, you're seeing, oh, there's a period. Or if it's a big monologue and there's paragraphs written, you'll play a beat in between a paragraph, but that mm-hmm. paragraph was never meant to be a pause. It was just meant so that you could legibly read it and understand what the writer was saying. And the biggest thing, acting at the speed of life, is my line, your line, my line, your line, which is not true to life, where it just becomes, mm-hmm. Tom will talk about a metronome, where you're, and it also comes into vocal variation on speeding up and slowing down, where it's just not, it's not true and it's not real. And you watch that, you'll be like, I don't know why this doesn't feel good, or I don't know why this isn't engaging. But in real life, people don't take turns. If it's a heated emotional argument, take a husband, a wife, they're talking over each other, and they're not, like, as an actor, it's like you're kind of thinking, like, I'm seeing your lines in my head maybe, and I know when you say your last word, then it's my turn to speak. But that's deadly as an actor, mm-hmm. because it just appears like he talks, she talks, he talks, she talks, versus like when you're just back and forth and you're seeing this thing and everyone's like, the words are unpredictable, the movement's unpredictable, they're the rate, inflection, pitch, and dynamics of their voice is changing constantly. So you're constantly on edge, which brings you into it. And then when you're doing that as an actor too, that's when, again, you finish a scene, you're like, holy fuck, that felt amazing, because it felt like how real human beings interact, not how actors who have memorized lines memorize the scene, and it's so polite. And I say my line, then you say your line, and then I say my line, and then you say your line. That's like, that's really one of the marks of bad acting, I would say, is that not acting at the speed of life. So we learn that so much, and it's such a quick fix in auditions. Sometimes it's just like, okay, that was great. The whole thing needs to be faster. That whole chunk needs to be faster right there. Get that out. Drive that point home, especially in a giant Shakespeare monologue. You'll talk about think longer thoughts, and some of Shakespeare's thoughts are so long. And you just got to keep driving the thought, driving the point, drive, versus slowing everything down and taking a pause at every punctuation mark.
Yep.
Next.
I'm done. Do you have any more?
We're done. Oh, okay. Well, I've got some more here that we can share here. That's a good one too. And this kind of relates to what we're saying, is acting is the only craft in the world that looks invisible. When it's done well, you don't see it. When it's done poorly, you do see that. You see an actor who's memorized lines and is kind of robotic, and they're taking turns, and everything's too slow, or everything's painted with one color, one emotion, or one mood. That's a good one. Tom always says, he says, mood spelled backwards is doom. So you'll watch a scene and be like, oh, this is a depressed scene, or I'm sad here. And then so you watch an actor play a whole scene sad, and you're like, okay, that was something. And then you watch someone who plays every note on the piano, or all the beats and all the choices. Another one that he says is, never make one choice when you can make three choices. Never make three choices when you can make 33 choices. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people will, in an audition, especially if it's something short, they'll be like, oh, I'll do one where I'm angry, or I'll do one where I'm happy, or like just real generic, general, non-specific choices, rather than looking at a scene and saying, how can I have a little bit of this and a little bit of that and a little bit of this and a little bit of that? Like a good recipe, you know, you don't want just one, okay, it's just all sugar, and it's just the sweetest, like even the one, all salt or all sugar. You want a little spice, you want a little of this, a little of that. And so you're like, wow, what a rich aroma, or what a rich palette of, I'm tasting so many things there. So that's always better. And especially in an audition, auditions, especially if it's a casting director or a production seeing you for the first time, you want to show them that you can play all the notes, that you can do all the things. You want to show them how versatile you are. Obviously how unique you are in your specific choices. But if you just play one thing, it's like, oh great, she can play sad. Oh great, he can yell and scream for 5 minutes. Versus figuring out where the writing changes, where the story changes, and painting with every color and being like, okay, I'm not just going to paint this whole scene black. I'm going to use red, and I'm going to use a little yellow, and I'm going to put a little pink in here, and ooh, maybe some purple. That'd be good there. So just finding all those choices. What else we got here? This is a good one. Luck and hope are not life strategies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what are life strategies? Having a good work ethic, taking the right classes, putting in the time, putting in the energy versus thinking like, thinking that you're just going to get lucky with a lucky break. Yeah, that might happen, but that also won't sustain you. You might get one job because you're lucky, or yeah, but just generally just hoping for something is not the way to get things done. This one's good. The most direct route to self-love and success is to make a series of commitments and keep them at all costs. Do you want to talk about that one?
Can you go first?
Yes. So most direct route to self-love and success is to make a series of commitments and keep them at all costs. So everyone in or a lot of people in all areas of life is if flaky. It's like you say you want something, but then the minute an obstacle comes up and a challenge, like, I mean, it might be a big audition comes up and it's like, oh, I can't because of work, or I can't because of the weather, or I can't because my dog, or whatever it might be. But it's like when you really, really, really want something, you decide you want it and then you go after it at all costs. And you look at people who have been successful in all avenues of life, it's because they decided they wanted something and then they went for it, or they committed to something. That's why for me, that's almost over and above the actual training itself, the decision and commitment to join conservatory, that in and of itself was a bigger thing than the individual training that I received, because I decided, okay, I'm going to show up 20 hours a week for 8 months. And I did. And when you do something like that, whether it's a weekly class or whether it's a commitment to a loved one or a commitment to work or a commitment to a production, when you book it, like booking something, it's like you can't book a job and then not show up on the day. It's you heard the term the show must go on, and if you don't show up, then the production's in a bit of a problem. So it's just committing to that, and then you start to build your own confidence. Versus the opposite, if you're always flaking out, or if you're deciding, you could also apply this to fitness. If you're deciding, oh, I want to get fit and healthy, so I'm going to get a gym membership, and then you don't show up, you're starting to train your mind that you don't show up, that you don't honor your own commitments. And then you end up being a person of weak character and of weak commitments, because even when you do make commitments, your brain and your body and everything is going to be like, oh, I usually don't follow through with this shit. And then you don't, versus when you do, like I'll use you as an example, Brandon, you're always here when needed. When someone books you, you're here. I can count the number of times in 2 years, probably on less than one hand, that something has come up where you weren't able to run a session, or if you said you were going to be here to help with Comedy Alley, when I generally, like 99.9% of the time, I know if Brandon says he's going to be somewhere and do something, that it ends up getting done. And that makes you head and shoulders above so many people, because we all know people where they say that, oh yeah, I'll be there. And in the back of your head, you're like, sure. Or Tom will harp on some people using the word try. You ever ask someone, hey, you want to come to the party? And yeah, I'll try to be there. When I hear that, it's like in my head, like I don't want to be confrontational, call people out on it, but in my head, I'm like, they're not coming. They're not coming. Because when I'll try to be there, what does that even mean? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll try to be there. You're going to be there or you're not going to be there. Don't try to be there. It's like imagine in a big commitment, like if you're like, yeah, oh, congratulations, you're hired. You start Monday. Great. I'll try to be there. Be like, what? Or will you marry me? Yes, I do. When's the wedding? Oh, I'll try to be there. I thought you were going to be there. No, I'll try to be there. Or it reminds me of Simpsons, where Bart has a line where he's like, or maybe it was, I don't know if it was Homer or Bart. I think it was Bart. Bart says, I can't promise to try, but I can promise to try to try, which is even worse. Anything you want to add to that about commitments?
I think it's one of the it's one of the ones that I wanted to finish off on as well. It comes back to my first one about raising your personal standards to the heavens. and it comes from you. If you want this, if you want to be a professional actor, if you want to be a professional storyteller, if you want to be a stand-up comedian, then you're the one that's going to have to commit to this. And committing comes in lots of different forms. Financial commitment, personal commitment, time commitment. It's not something that comes lightly. And it's not something that doesn't demand a lot of time. It demands an incredible amount of time. And the more you do it, the better you're going to get at it. And subsequently get faster at it so that you do have more time for other things that you maybe want to do. But like, if you're not committed to this and haven't made a list of things that you're going to accomplish either this week, this month, this year, then you're doing yourself a disservice as a performer. Because nothing is given to you. We always have to interview for our roles, audition for our jobs, and we have to earn those spots. Do we have complete control over every aspect of that casting process, of that audition process? No.
Yes. Oh, we don't.
But what we do have control over is ourselves, our commitment to our craft and to ourselves. And as Tom likes to say, an actor is a professional human being.
Love it.
And the more that we understand how human beings work and how we operate, like, a lot of us suffer from procrastination. But if we make a series of commitments and do everything we can to stick to them, we have something that we're striving for. And we're willing to break that procrastination stick, I guess.
Procrastination stick. I like it.
Procrastination stick. We're willing to break the procrastination stick.
Love it. Well, I mean, we could go on and on and on and on. We got so many notes. We've spent hours and hours with Tom. I'll share the last couple here, and then we'll wrap it up. Make sure, if you haven't done so already, register for the online workshop. It's a masterclass. Tom's been nice enough to present it or to do it in conjunction with Actors Audition Club and Laughing Vikings. It is free. Go to laughingvikings.com/Tom, and you can witness some of these transformations while he's working with actors directly. Yep. Or you could submit to be a performer and actually do a monologue and be coached and directed by Tom directly. But I'll share this one. It relates to trying. To try is a lie. Like when someone says, I'll try to be there, it's like, just tell me no. You know, I'd rather you tell me no, I can't, because I'd love to be there, but I have this other commitment than, oh, I'll try to be there. Yeah. But he says, to try is a lie. It makes me cry and then I die. And Nike never said, just try it. They said, just do it. One of the biggest ones, and it relates to what you just mentioned, is ask and fight for what you want. And say no to what you don't want. Mm-hmm. So if this is something that you want, whether it's acting or life as a performer or anything in your life, fight for it. And I think that's something that we forget. It's like we kind of want it, but then we kind of only half fight for it, or we let other people steer us in other directions, or we let other people talk us out of it. But yeah, it's like no one's going to do it for you. You got to fight for it. And I think all of us, in all areas of our lives, you know, deep down, if you've, especially if you've done any training and learned from top mentors, you know the things that you could be doing right now. You have a picture of, what if I was doing this all out? What if I gave this all of myself and was doing all of the things that I could be doing to get to that goal or to get to that level or to become that person that I want to be? And most of us fall short, and we're really the only species that does that can really recognize and perceive our vast potential and then play way below that. Like I've heard the saying, a tree doesn't decide, oh, I'm not going to grow bigger and grow taller and more rich and more robust and my roots are going to go deeper. A tree doesn't half-ass it, you know. No animal does that either, except for humans. We're this weird paradox of humans where we're the most powerful human, I think, beings out there because of our ability to see the future and to learn from the past and our brains and our opposable thumbs and all the things that make us so special. But we also have this ability to phone it in and procrastinate and to just play at levels that are way, way, way below our vast potential. So ask for what you want and fight for it. And just ask yourself, if I did this all out, if I showed up fully every single day, I mean, we all have our down days. It's the four agreements. Always do your best, really, is what it comes down to. And your best is going to change when you're sick, when you're depressed, if someone just died, if someone just broke up with you, if you got COVID, then things are going to change. But always be asking yourself, what can I be doing? How can I be showing up fully? Am I really fighting for this? And don't say that you want something and then underperform or underplay. If you really want something, commit to it and go for it and show up. And that's a big part of it too, is just showing up. You'd be hard. It's amazing how just showing up is a thing. It's like, you just show up long enough, you'll look around and your peers will slowly disappear. And the people around you, will be, just a better and better crop of people because you're around people that consistently showed up for you and showed up for themselves and just didn't take no for an answer and didn't settle. So yeah, fight for it.
Yep.
All right. Last chance. Sign up at laughingvikings.com/Tom to join us at that masterclass. Make sure to smash that subscribe button. Share this out too. I think this has been a fantastic episode. So share this episode out. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite podcast platforms. Also, we don't ask this very often, but give us a rating and a comment on any of those podcast platforms as well. That definitely helps get these messages out there. And we'll see you tomorrow, November 17th at 6 p.m. Eastern time. And I guarantee you, you're going to hear a ton of what we just explained from Tom, but he's going to say it in his own way and in a better, more impactful way probably than we've said it. But I'm also proud of, like, think about how much of that is ingrained in us, and it's because we've heard it over and over again. People, we need to hear these messages over and over again. And
it's not just hearing it, it's telling it to ourselves as well. These are the quotes and these are the Tomisms that speak to us, because that's what we want. That's what we've been striving for since we started working with him.
Right. And one of the best ways to learn something is by teaching it. First, learn it yourself and then teach it to others. Because I teach this, we share this. How many times have we shared these things in a podcast? But the benefit is we get to hear it again every time we teach it to someone else. Or every time we're working with an actor on their audition, we're sharing these things with them. And then we're reminded of it as well. So, yes. All right. Thanks, everyone. This has been episode 114. Thank you, Tom Todorov. Thank you, Emily Moulton. Thank you for the entire, all the members and the members of the conservatory and the studio. We love all of you, and we'll see you at the masterclass tomorrow.
Goodbye.